Jackie Fox in Dublin and Sean Whelan in Washington, D.C. Sean, we're coming towards the end of the year and a presidential term when everything becomes very reflective. Isn't that right?
Well, it's right if you're the old guy on his way out of the White House in a couple of weeks' time, a lot earlier than he thought. It's definitely not the case if you're Donald Trump, who's doing nothing but looking to the future and telling everybody about his plans and previewing the inaugural speech on 20th of January. It's also a great time if you're a football fan, with college playoffs coming up and the business end of the NFL season hoving into sight. So lots to look forward to as well at this time of year.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because there will be much said about Joe Biden's legacy in the coming weeks, months, even years, domestically and internationally. When it comes to the latter, what I think is fascinating about Joe Biden is that he is, or was, the foreign policy man. He led the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he was even picked by Barack Obama as a running mate due to that knowledge and experience with international affairs. He had a lifetime of foreign policy experience in Washington. He was the guy who said he'd repair alliances damaged by his predecessor, but his missteps overshadow everything else. The chaotic withdrawal of US troops from Afghanistan. Remember fist bumping Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And some say US aid to Ukraine was 2 years too late. And this is all before what happened in Gaza, Sean.
The chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, that's 100% on him. And on his watch, there's no other way to describe it. Chaotic. And that was the tipping point. When you look back at the approval ratings of the presidency of Joe Biden, and indeed of his vice president Kamala Harris as well, it was that July-August period during the withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021, that is when the needle went south and never ever recovered for Biden. He went from 63% approval down to 39%, and he never got back above it. It was a dreadful, dreadful performance, and that was the point at which his presidency went under the water and just never got out of it, despite everything else that had happened to him. And the thing about Biden, I kind of agree with David Axelrod's analysis that history is going to be kinder to him than the American electorate has been and the American commentariat right now. Because when we look at his situation right now, his track record in foreign affairs, his track record in the domestic economy, what we see right now looks pretty messy. But I think over the longer term, it's going to play out pretty well to Biden's advantage, particularly on the economy. Foreign policy takes a longer term to play out as well. If you look at Gaza in isolation, it's a dreadful mess. You look at the wider Middle East situation, that's unfolding still as a consequence of what happened in October 7th. And we're seeing that being played out right now as we speak in Syria. The map of the Middle East is being remade in ways that are unimaginable a year ago. Now, how much influence Biden has over any of that, I've no idea. None of us are going to have any idea for years, maybe decades to come. But certainly something profound has happened in foreign policy and foreign affairs, and the world is being remade before our very eyes. Biden's term, his four-year term, is all but finished now. But he will have had some kind of impact on it. But what it is, I mean, it's like that old saying attributed to Zhou Enlai about the French Revolution. What's its impact? Too soon to tell.
Well, let's see if we can dig into it a little bit. Professor Deirdre Heenan, you're listening there somewhere. I'm bringing you in. How are things?
Good. Thank you very much. I'm listening with interest.
Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast, because Deirdre, you heard us talking about Joe Biden's legacy there. And Joe Biden has placed his Irish roots, which are not in doubt here, at the heart of his political identity. And on the political stage, he has promoted the Northern Ireland peace process. And during some of his presidency, Northern Ireland's power sharing government was not functioning at the time. It had collapsed in 2022 when the DUP pulled out as part of a protest against post-Brexit trade rules for Northern Ireland. Deirdre, do you think Joe Biden looked to Northern Ireland when everything else was hitting the fan for him elsewhere and thought, hold on, I could make a difference here. This is somewhere I could have a success.
I think that might be slightly cynical. I mean, he has played his Irish roots throughout his political career. He was involved in the peace process with Bill Clinton. He pushed for a peace process and pushed people towards it. So I think he felt great ownership of the peace process. Obviously, he couldn't be another Bill Clinton. It was a different context. We'd already achieved peace. But there was a job for him to do to promote and stabilise Northern Ireland. And really, I know we really don't want to think about it and think back to those heady days of the Brexit chaos and the protocol debates. But actually, Joe Biden, in terms of making a difference for me, when I reflect back on what he did, we were constantly being told by the UK government that they would act unilaterally around the protocol. So we had the absolutely ludicrous internal markets bill with our then Secretary of State standing at the dispatch box and saying that he would break international law in a limited and specific way. That was followed by Boris Johnson, who clearly felt that he could rewrite the Northern Ireland Protocol as he wished, because he didn't really mean it when he signed up to it. And this was followed, as if to add insult to injury, by Liz Truss and Liz Truss' protocol bill, where she basically said, I'm going to push this bill through Parliament and I am going to disapply the bits that I don't like. And throughout all of that, it was Joe Biden saying, well, actually, you would need to be very careful about what you're doing, because anything that we view as dismantling the Northern Ireland peace process, anything that we think will cause concern around an Irish border, anything that will cause a hardening of the border, we won't stand for it. We simply won't stand by. He repeatedly said that he felt very strongly about the protocol. And whilst Liz Truss was threatening, I think people here felt, well, she isn't really going to do it, because she would not go against her greatest ally, as she referred to the US. So I think when we look back, there was a realization that what they were threatening to do would really cause significant damage to UK-US relations. And also, Joe Biden made it very clear that this long promised trade deal with the US wasn't really a priority for him.
That's absolutely true. The priority on trade deals, I mean, they're not here in America, they're not interested in doing free trade deals with anybody. The opposite is the case. They're trying to shut down and pull back from free trade deals. And we've seen that already with the incoming Trump administration threatening to slap tariffs on Canada, their number one trading partner, and Mexico, their number two trading partner, as well as China, their number three trading partner. So the idea of doing more free trade deals, probably not realistically on the table anyway, but I think the British needed to hear that at the time. I was in London, Westminster correspondent, during the first year of that Biden presidency, and the message was certainly coming through loud and clear and being received with great dismay amongst the more starry-eyed Brexiters, that everything was going to be great on the sunny sunlit uplands of free trade with America, and they could just bypass everything in Europe. That wasn't the case. European trade and investment is always going to be far bigger than British trade and investment, as far as the Americans are concerned. They have a really sweet deal going in Europe, and they didn't want to see anything disrupting that. And also, as guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement, that's been one of the enduring diplomatic successes for the US in the past 30 years. So they really want to keep that going, and they have absolutely no interest in seeing anything that was going to threaten that and that stability in any kind of way. So the messages that were coming from Joe Biden and Richie Neal and Brendan Boyle and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, this collective group of leadership in the White House and on Capitol Hill, those messages were very powerful back to Britain. And, you know, the Americans ultimately didn't have to do much more than talk. But when they spoke, they were listened to and they were heard and they were understood.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think it is important to think back to the time when the context was, we can do what we like. If you don't like it, we're going to change it. And unionists, of course, here were determined that the protocol would be changed and that unilateral action was possible. But Biden said time and time again, a huge amount of time and effort has gone into this. And importantly, it was one of the few areas where there was a bipartisan effort. It was one of the few things that all political parties could agree on. the importance of the peace process in Ireland and the ownership that they felt of it, and that they simply couldn't stand back and watch anything that they felt would have any sort of unravelling or present any kind of threat to that much cherished peace process.
Because Joe Biden, he visited Northern Ireland back in 2023, Deirdre, for the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. What were your impressions of him back then? And did he make a difference with those words, do you think?
I'm not so sure. I don't think that visit was terribly important, in truth, because it was a fleeting visit. He came to our university, Ulster University, and of course we were delighted for the coup that we got because of his visit. But he came and he gave a speech that obviously had been prepared, and he left. And that was really that. And it seemed that when he crossed the border into the south, he was very much at home in his homeland and seemed much more relaxed. And it was almost like, I had to visit that dreadful north, and here I am in the south now, visiting all my relations and finding out about my roots. Now, maybe that's slightly unfair, but I think in terms of when we think about the difference that he made, I think it is important to say that his appointment of Joe Kennedy was viewed by many people as important. He was the special envoy to Northern Ireland for economic affairs. And of course, with the Kennedy name, he brought that little bit of mystique. He brought that little bit of stardust, and he was feted wherever he went. And he talked up Northern Ireland. He certainly talked a good game about the North. And he talked incessantly about how well we were doing, the possibilities that we had, why people would come invest. And if only there was a stable government, then people would come and invest and spend their money here, American companies. And I suppose listening to it, in many ways, it's reminding me of the Kamala Harris speeches where she was saying to people, you know, you've never had it so good. Our Dow Jones is doing well. The GDP is doing well. But people weren't feeling that. People weren't feeling that in their pockets. That wasn't the mood. And when Joe Kennedy was coming, telling us that we were absolutely outstanding, fabulous, the place where everyone wanted to be, it didn't reflect the mood on the ground, because we've had government up, government down. We've had long periods without government, but a real feeling here that we are in an economic drift, that we have been at the eye of the storm with those Brexit negotiations, but that people don't feel that optimism, and that during that period, those long periods without government, that our public sector had gone into decay and decline, and our health services in disarray, education is in chaos, and the infrastructure will take years to reverse some of the damage that has been done by neglect. So hearing this upbeat American coming telling us that we were the Sri Lanka of the new world, it just really began to grate with people, I think, and they thought, you know, there must come a time where people here are beginning to say, we're going to have to do this for ourselves. We're going to have to move away from this starry-eyed approach to the US and people coming in on a white charger to save us. We have to move away from dependency and say, if we are going to address all those social and economic problems, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Because things are very different, Deirdre, aren't they, from 30 years ago, nearly 30 years ago, actually, when former President Bill Clinton was greeted by crowds when he became the first sitting American president to visit Northern Ireland. And I suppose, you know, during Clinton's presidency in the 90s, he also wanted to establish a legacy during his time in office. You know, back then the US was trying to figure out what it stood for after the collapse of the Soviet Union. He also needed to derail a flurry of controversies back home and show his critics that he had a functioning foreign policy, because many said that he had no experience or vision. And Northern Ireland fit the bill for Bill Clinton. It was a place that he could intervene where there'd be no loss of American life. Efforts for peace were already underway. And he also understood this side of the Atlantic after he was a Rhodes Scholar in Oxford, and if a peace agreement was reached, it could be used as a blueprint for elsewhere. But Deirdre, do you see a big difference between Bill Clinton and Joe Biden? I mean, Clinton didn't have the strongest Irish link, but you couldn't doubt his commitment and understanding of Northern Irish affairs.
No, I think it's entirely different. I think in the Clinton era, and I remember those Clinton visits very well, there was euphoria. people were being promised peace, long for peace. And that was entirely different. When Joe Biden came along, his role was very much around policy, around addressing the issues of trade and the economy, whereas Bill Clinton was pulling at the heartstrings. This was about us actually getting to a place, an emotional place. It was much more emotional. The mood was very different. And it was about changing our worldview of ourselves. It was about optimism and hope and joy. And I suppose after those long toxic Brexit negotiations, hope and joy and optimism were very much in short supply. So I think, to be fair to Joe Biden, he came in at a very different time, into a very different context, and the world has changed. And I suppose when I think about Joe Biden and his foreign policy, I think with him, the world has moved on dramatically, and we now can see the limits of US power. And we can see that the rule-based order that the US has largely adopted is crumbling. And the idea of democracy versus the bad guys, the autocrats, is just far too simplistic to define a complex world. And that kind of framing is no longer fit for purpose. And I think that's really what we're beginning to understand. We have to understand relationships with China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and they have fundamentally altered the world order. And it would seem, looking at that, that actually the people who describe themselves as the good guys, the liberals in the middle, they don't have an answer. They don't appear prepared for this change in world order, and they don't really want to accept that it's happening. So, for example, how are you going to continue the G7 with no input from Russia or China? The UN Security Council needs to be reformed. Possibly the EU needs to be reformed. But you won't create stability by constantly shutting people out. And I think really what we will see now is an attempt to explore the possibilities of creating a different world order. And just simply having toxic relationships with China and Russia isn't good for the world, and I don't think it's sustainable. There are two wars currently being played out in Ukraine and the Middle East, and there's no end in sight, and there's no real strategic thinking as to how to bring them to an end.
Deirdre Heenan, thank you so much for joining us on States of Mind. We really appreciate it.
Nice to chat.
And finally, three things to know in 30 seconds. The presidential election isn't finalised yet. Remember the Electoral College? Well, the appointed presidential electors from each state will meet in their state capitals to cast their official votes for the presidential candidate who won their state's votes. Number two, a new Congress will be sworn in on January 3rd. And what's number three, Sean?
It's January 6th. Remember what happened last time? Well, they got to do it all again when Kamala Harris this time will preside as chair of the Senate and formally count those votes from the Electoral College and declare Donald Trump the winner of the presidential election. And this time, we assume there will be no bad things happening on the steps of Congress.
We'll see what happens. Sean, you're taking some well-deserved time off, so I'll keep the show on the road for a little bit and chat to you just before the official end of this election, which is Inauguration Day on January 21st.
Yes, indeed. Talk to you then, Jackie.